Welcome. This is the Sikh Coach Podcast, a podcast exploring the Sikh principles and how to live them in the 21st century. Episode 8, Tarakki, Male Mental Health. Welcome to the Sikh Coach Podcast. This is Avtar Singh. Today marks the start of Men's Health Week in the UK, which starts on the 15th of June. And it runs every year in the week before Father's Day. There are some key statistics that we need to consider when we talk about men's mental health. In England, around 1 in 8 men have a common mental health problem. Also, men are 3 times more likely to die by suicide than women. It's the highest amongst men aged 45 to 49. However, men may be reluctant to seek support for their mental health or disclose mental health problems to loved ones. We're very fortunate in this episode to have 2 members of the organisation called Tarakki. Tarakki is a UK-based not-for-profit organisation whose main aim is to work with the Punjabi community to create spaces where all individuals can access mental health awareness, education and support to better care for themselves and one another. In this episode, we catch up with Amardeep Singh and Sandeep Panesar, who are both coordinators who focus on men's mental health initiatives for Tarakki. Do check out the episode details for further resources available for anybody who wants more information about men's mental health. And also do support organisations like Tarakki who are doing very important work for the South Asian community. I hope you enjoy the episode and stay blessed. So welcome to all of our listeners today. And we're very fortunate to have 2 amazing personalities with us from an organisation called Tarakki. This episode is all about mental health for men. So let's dive in with an introduction with our guests. So Amardeep, would you like to start first?
Hi, yes, I'm Amardeep Singh. I am based just outside Birmingham, a small town called Oldbury. I've been a facilitator for the Birmingham Men's Forum for Tarakki since this time last year. So basically July last year, 2019.
Wow. So what do you do professionally outside of Tarakki?
A day job is I am a pharmacist specializing in HIV, sexual health and viral hepatitis at Sandal and West Birmingham Hospitals, which is a local trust, and also one of the lead education pharmacists within that trust as well.
Okay, wow, great. Okay, Sandeep?
Hi there, I'm Sandeep. I am also one of the Tarakki facilitators and actually started at the same time as Amardeep, so around July 2019. I live in Walsall, which is just slightly north of Birmingham. And professionally, I work for the University of Birmingham as a project manager. So it involves setting up a new mental health service for students up to the age of 25. Which is due to run to summer 2022. And essentially it's a low level mental health intervention service for students who may just want to have a chat about anything without the stigma or the label of mental health around it. And in addition to that, I also work as an assistant psychologist in a early intervention psychiatric unit.
All right, so I think at this point it'd be good for our listeners to learn more about Tarakki, what it is, what does it mean, and the journey so far.
So Tarakki is I describe it as a grassroots foundation, a grassroots movement that was created by the founder, Sharanjit Singh Tucker, in 2017. And that was when he reflected on his own difficulties with mental health when he was an undergrad student, living away from home, feeling difficulties in isolation, social anxiety, and that. He was helped through that process by a network of friends at university. And subsequently, he reflected on that and thought about himself as a marginalized male from a particular ethnic group, and thought about how little engagement there was from members of our community with formal mental health services, but also possibly what kind of barriers there can be within services to empathizing or understanding how we deal with mental health in the Punjabi community. It's a wide-ranging organization. As you obviously Punjabi speakers all know, Tarakki essentially means achievement. And that was a suggestion he was given by his mum. In effect, something to bring a positive spin on what can be obviously a very painful and difficult set of experiences that people might suffer.
Definitely. I think the name is very apt, and I think it has positive connotations with it. So, it's always spoken about in positivity to say someone's progressing and achieving and as on that learning path. So yeah, definitely. I think that's a very good name to have. So it predominantly helps the Punjabi communities. Solely is that the charity was set up for, and in regards to location wise, how far are the services, which sort of areas do you support in the UK, and I think there may be some abroad elements as well that Tarakki mentions about supporting.
So we have the forums that we're facilitators for are effectively monthly forums where a particular subject is discussed in a closed environment. We have those in both Birmingham and London for men, women, and LGBT, people who identify as LGBT and Punjabi. So there's a separate forum for each of those. The forums in London were established, most of them over a year ago. And we've kind of followed in Birmingham, setting up something similar. And doing things in a very well with a similar model.
Okay, and they're pretty much face to face model of working with people.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess Tarakki does mention doing some work in Canada and America. Is that affiliated organizations or volunteers carrying out the similar kind of work in just that different in a different country?
I believe there have been some collaborations in Brampton that Sharanjit has led, as well as very similar forums with a very similar model out there as well. So the latter projects have been largely Tarakki led. Then some of the other events that have been run in places like Gurdwaras and universities and other educational spaces have been collaborations. I believe they've collaborated with Sorch.
Ah, okay. Sorch Mental Health. So they've been on the show as well earlier. That's brilliant. I think it's good to see these community-led grassroots organizations all working together, because I think it's definitely a team effort. And we don't want to get to the point, I mean, as Punjabis, we know we all end up doing similar things in similar different organizations, but working separately to each other, which doesn't really make our... You know, it's not best use of resources, but we don't get that bigger impact as we should do. So I think there's one thing I really noticed is that there's so much engagement and crossover and sort of helping each other out, because everybody, mental health is such a wide topic, such a big net that, you know, if you're dealing with domestic violence, there's a bit of mental health in there. You know, if you're dealing with grooming or sexual exploitation, there's mental health. There's even mental, you know, it's such a broad, vast net that you need to work together, because you kind of come together and you have the resources and you can sort of help each other and refer people to each other's services as well. So that's brilliant. So I guess the focus of this episode is around mental health for men. And we know there's a number of challenges there, which are both cultural, which are both specifically for men. And I think there was the initiative you said you're involved in is the forums in Birmingham around the men's health, mental health. Can you give us a bit of background in what those are, how they started, and, you know, what has the journey been like so far, specifically in that area?
So I think we started off with just coming up and brainstorming a set of issues and topics that we thought would be really relevant to Punjabi men. And I guess what we found throughout the forums is that we would continue to get feedback from from our attendees and keep adapting what forums that will run in the following months. And that's been really helpful for us in a way to understand a bit more about some of the deep-rooted issues that do come out. And we've run forums ranging from recognizing signs of mental illness and what to do about it, from relationships to marriages to drugs, alcohol. Trying to remember what else we've done. Actually, we've done quite a few. Amelie, can you remember the rest of them?
We did a few on mental health. I remember one of the first was on depression. We had, I think, quite a well-received session on recognizing and differentiating different mental health diagnoses and kind of connecting people to services and appropriate signposting. So there was something applicable for attendees to take back, you know, whether they've been affected themselves or friends or relatives, and, you know, to be a good takeaway message.
Okay, brilliant. So the themes, I guess some of them are probably not surprising for us coming from the community. Is there more of an uptake now for people to have those discussions? I mean, one of the good things about this sounds like it's a community-led initiative, i.e., you know, it's for the community, but led by the community and what they want to talk about, which I think is very powerful, because you've got then the buy-in from the people who are involved, and then they're going to be open to it, to learn from each other. And I guess, so the themes are still similar to the themes that we kind of know culturally are expected around, you know, drug abuse, alcohol predominantly, and sort of relationship issues and things like that. So has the response been really positive for that? And has there been, you know, the value that they're gaining from this? What is your perceptions been from that so far? And what do you think is the path for the future for dealing with these big, big issues that we have as a community?
Yeah, I think what's been really interesting for us is to just realize and just see that a lot of the mental health issues experienced by Punjabi men are generally experienced by a lot of men. So whether that be depression, anxiety, because a lot of the time it's that stigma around talking. But I think it's the foundations upon which those are built are common across Punjabi communities. And that is social pressures, family expectations. You need to get married by X age. You need this amount of children. They have to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant. I think it's these pressures which people are bringing up in the forums. And what we're finding really nice is that we're starting to normalize these conversations now. And our attendees are taking them away and talking with their friends and family and spreading the message that actually it's an okay thing to talk about. It's not as taboo as it used to be. And I think in a way for us, we've observed that attendees will come back. Some would come back for all of them. Some would come back if they've got a particular experience or an issue related to a topic that we're doing and would either want to contribute or to simply just sit back and listen. Because actually sitting back and listening is making it normal in that hour and a half that we do spend that time with them.
I think the cultural, the expectation part is quite heavy. I think it kind of expands quite a lot of mental health issues as well, and I think it's not just our community, and there's other communities as well that have that sort of expectation that you're born into. An expectation, it may not even be your family, but you know, there's a community around you, and then start questioning you, oh, isn't your children aren't they going to get married, or aren't they going to get degrees, or you know, my son daughter has become a doctor, and the eliteness around it. But I think at the moment, do you think there's like it's a bit of a transition that's happening between the old way of thinking, which maybe was okay in that time because the intentions were pure in the sense that they wanted people to become somebody and become somebody professional. And when people came into this country, predominantly, they thought, you know, become a doctor, lawyer, solicitor, well-paid, well-respected, you know, and it's, you know, you become favorable for marriage, you know, all that sort of stuff that comes with it. There must be a generation gap that's coming now where the new generation completely, they don't even consider these fields because, you know, there's new ways of working, there's social media, jobs that didn't exist, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So are you finding that aspect as well, is that people trying to reconcile between the life they're living now compared to what they are clashing with within their community and their parents? And that conversation is quite difficult. And I suppose for men in that sense, that being seen as traditional breadwinners and stuff, it's quite a difficult paradigm. It might be too late before you start wanting to correct, and that's the challenge of it, because you might be married, you might have responsibilities, you might already be quite further down your life. So how would you support these type of individuals, or what have you found has worked well with them in the past?
I guess we, as facilitators, we're there to signpost and direct. A lot of solutions for folk, I think, have been from sharing their thoughts, concerns, experiences, and then also receiving back from other members within the group. And, you know, it's interesting how much you see the same things kind of echoed as you kind of described from member to member. But actually also suggestions and different ways of viewing things, or a different spin or slant is often provided by members of the group as well. I guess we are there to make sure people turn up, get a snack, every now and then direct conversation or nudge a few things here and there.
Yes.
And sometimes start things off, but not necessarily us providing solutions.
Mm.
Often that solution is within or within the room. And it's just a case of sometimes that just those thoughts being aired publicly and a validation from others, others you respect and trust.
I suppose you having the conversation in the first place is normalizing that situation. And then you almost become a support network for each other, because you're from a similar background, and you understand that. And I guess if you're sitting alone, not thinking about, or not interacting with anybody else, then the problem seems, people may think actually the problem is with them, that, you know, the rest of the world feels that that's what they should be the normal. But then actually conversing with somebody in the same situation is powerful, because then you realize actually it's not just you.
One thing I think I failed to say was that, you know, we set our stall out as the group and space being a non-judgmental space. I use the word trust, but actually also just somewhere free of judgment. And I think that is one of the main kind of main positives of the group, and one of the things that really gets people to where they need to be and allows them to get what they need out of a conversation.
Yes. Sorry, Sandeep, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say that there's almost a real struggle between wanting to adhere to your family values, but also to try and break away from it enough where you can say that you are living a fulfilled life.
Yes.
And I think for some people, it is seeking that validation, is actually thinking, oh, wait, they've had a very similar thought to me. That doesn't mean it's entirely bad. Everybody in this room is non-judgmental. Therefore, I feel that actually it's not so bad that people are reacting so negatively towards it, that I might, you know, pursue that route.
Yes.
And you find people's confidence start to build. And it honestly just takes that one other person to do something that you're thinking, for you to have that confidence to break out the shell and say, do you know what? That's who I am, and that's who I'm going to be.
Yes. It's almost like the person you're meant to be, you probably would have sacrificed an element of what you would have done, where you would have been, where you would have worked, and the decisions you would have done differently. But because of the other pressures, you know, you don't end up living a full life as you would want to. Have you had much engagement with the gurdwaras and the infrastructures that we have existingly to sort of welcome you to do these discussions within you know, the places where most of these people would go for, you know, praying, and, you know, this, that place of solitude. How has that been for you?
The broader organization has been welcomed in. Sharanjit's run a number of different forums and talks in different Gurdwara settings, okay, to different audiences about a range of subjects. And those have been quite well received. I guess every Gurdwara is its own organization and entity, and some can be more receptive than others. But largely, and I don't want to generalize too much, but largely with a younger set of people to engage with, we've tended to find Gurdwara authorities have been much more receptive and welcoming.
Okay, that's good. I think that there needs to be a bit of, this is not just a difficulty for yourselves, it's a number of other organizations who want to provide the same level of service. They've come up with the same barriers. And it is like having an individual conversation with each Gurdwara, dependent on their appetite for taking advantage of these services, really. And I think the concept of the Gurdwara was not to be a place of worship, but an institution which helped people to, you know, deal with life, because effectively Gurbani is a source of, you know, improvement, helping you to understand the world, understanding your purpose, and actually to fulfill your, you know, the reason why you're here. Everyone has something to offer in a different way than everybody else. And it's to fulfill that in a positive way for the community and society. So, I think if anybody who is listening, who is part of a Gurdwara management committee somewhere, and you haven't been in touch with Tarakki or any of the other organizations that are doing wonderful work, I think definitely take the contact details and be in touch, because these, if you're getting people from our community into a forum that's outside the Gurdwara, that's the validation that there's a need for it. And especially if those communities are asking to talk about those issues themselves, then that's even more validation. So I think what would be good is, actually, I know male mental health, I think, sometimes doesn't hit the headlines as much. I mean, just today we've had news of a Bollywood actor, Sushant Singh Rajput, who's taken his life. So this does happen to all types of males in any country, anywhere. It doesn't discriminate. So it is an issue that we need to bring to light. Is there any statistics or, you know, known research, or is there a lack of that purely because men don't talk about it, or is not diagnosed properly in the first place? How do you feel about that?
There's a dearth of research specifically in Punjabi or Sikh or you know, different religious communities. Much of it tends to be kind of clumped together in BAME, which I know is not always a helpful categorization. We have found small amounts of research out there, and they really point to very low levels of engagement. Some of that being members of community being reticent and inhibited and not wanting to engage with formal mental health services. Though there are examples of sometimes services not necessarily understanding needs of a very specific community and necessarily being able to empathize. So I think there is an issue of both things there, both hands not necessarily meeting.
What I feel is that we are now having almost the community take forward the services that almost should be in place already. But because of the existing systems, I don't know, Sandeep, you might know more about how the inner workings of the NHS and the, you know, setting up a new service like you have done in the university, of how there is a missing chunk of research or data or the right people being involved in those initiatives to actually understand the gaps in the services and how they don't reach certain communities. And so almost they need organizations like Drukki to take ownership or push forward that need and maybe possibly deliver wider services. So what do you think about that, Sander?
I guess from experience, a lot of it is around the language that's used. I think a lot of it, if you're talking about mental health issues and madness and asylums and psychiatric wards, that strikes fear in some communities more than others. And you find that more often with the Punjabi community. If you are straying away from what is considered normal behavior, then the immediate go-to is they are mad. So I think a lot of the time, these community-led projects are tailored specifically to said communities, but using language that they understand. So things around that, okay, yes, it's okay to have these feelings. It doesn't necessarily mean you are crazy or have mental health issues. It is just a different normal on the spectrum. And this is how we've got to try and work around it and deal with it. And I think a lot of it with, particularly with Punjabi communities, it is word of mouth, it is talking to one another. If a service says to you that we can help you, then the trust that goes into that is quite difficult to put a trust into that. Whereas if you've got a relative or a parent or anybody who says, actually, I've been through something similar, this can help you, and particularly with the elderly, then they're more likely to go and engage with that service, having been encouraged to do so by someone who's had direct experience and that they directly trust.
So I guess language is a big thing for us. Like you said, it's the words are powerful and mostly they mean negative, and it's a blanket. It doesn't matter how non-normal you look or talk, it's the straight label, that person's mad. So it doesn't help anybody. And how do you think, so I know Drukki is involved in changing the awareness and the language. So what sort of initiatives does Drukki do to do that?
Well, we've created a number of Punjabi language materials or shared those created by other organizations. There's a fair amount around demystifying in Punjabi script, so it's a little bit more user-friendly. And then the rest, I think, is partly engaging in person at places of worship and trying to use those informal networks to spread the word of what we do and how we do it. Also bringing together information about different sources available. So in Birmingham a few years ago, there was a joint service directory created, which gave information about different health, mental health and social support services that were available. And all of that information was in one place and accessible and regularly updated. Often with the third sector, organizations are there, contracts end, someone else takes over. And, that kind of thing is very difficult for people to navigate. So partly demystifying language, but partly connecting people to services and making them aware of what types of formal and less formal support are available. But not purely the clinical stuff in a clinical setting. Various types of social support as well, because obviously one often feeds into the other.
And I think social media has significantly helped with trying to get the message out there. So Drukki has an Instagram account and a Facebook page as well. And typically what's shared on there are stories from other people. And you'll find that they'll say, I managed to access support from here. There may be a post saying, does anybody know of any Punjabi specific counselors who are available? And then there are a number of people who respond. And then through that, people are able to then see what services can be tailored more towards my issues and what I am currently presenting with.
So I guess that could do away with the barrier that men feel that may not want to talk face to face because they're recognized. So I think that's the power of social media. You can be anonymous to an extent and tap into the information. And you can still be anonymous when you call up these services just to get a general feel for what's going on. Can I talk, just to talk about what they're thinking about and validate, you know, that their thoughts are still valid.
I'd argue also though, it's often a case of getting people into the room, sitting them down and humanizing the whole thing.
Yes.
We find that with our forums, you sometimes encounter people who are quite reticent and not sure about whether they want to come and join in, or when they arrive, not necessarily wanting to share. But once they're in, once they see what things are about, they understand that confidentiality will be maintained. So obviously, that's a cornerstone. And I'll say it again, it's a non-judgmental environment. You know, that shifts things quite quickly and quite well.
Yes. So I think there's a good point about the non-judgmental space. And we had earlier conversation about this, me and Amardeep, around judgment and our community. You know, compared to what our faith teaches us to actually what we do, we're probably experts in judging. probably so experts, should be an X factor, but... you know, there's so many labels that we've created, so many organizations and so many things that we pick and choose and say, right, this is who I am, and create our own little boxes. And then we judge people who are outside of those boxes, dehumanizing the whole process, you know, that this is a human being, that there's not just that one facet that I agree to, that they must agree to, and then that eradicates it. So I think there is a lot of that. And I think having a non-judgmental space and convincing people about it is going to be a real challenge. But I think you have to start somewhere. But I think at least the service is there, the forum is there, you've created this, and it's a shared space. And hopefully people who attend tell other people, because word of mouth is very powerful, because they could say, you know what, I was suffering with this, or I had this, but I went to a place which is safe and I made good friends and support network to help me. I think that's critical. So I think you mentioned the joint service directory. Was that a general directory, or was it something in the
city? That was a local services one for North Birmingham.
Ah, North Birmingham. I almost thought that.
For very specific areas, which was community driven, but very much built around needs of local people, which is something I think probably has to be replicated. The model can be replicated in different places, but the services available and the needs of communities will differ from place to place.
Definitely. I think that's something that we need. And it's almost like we already have Sikh directories, or, you know, people have set up Punjabi directories. It's almost, if they could feed in to that existing model, it'd probably be easier to just have a one place where, you know, you've got mental health charities within Sikh, you know, organizations, and people know that this is an up-to-date list where I can find out exactly where the touch points are, both on social media and as organizations to get in touch with. All right, so recently I saw something online, I think from an organization, Seek Your Mind, so I think you probably know of them as well. But they posted something up around a specific case somebody shared with them around, it was a male, a young Sikh, and it was the same thing we talked about, the language, you know, because they got into drugs and certain part of life which wasn't positive for them, but that led them to have voices and etc., and they were labeled mad. And the problem was the generation of the parents did not know how to deal with that. And because they had that label mad, they either went to somebody who they thought was a spiritual person who could deal with the spirits or the mad part. And when that probably failed, they took them to the psychiatric part. So there's almost two different extremes there. And it almost seems that plays part and parcel with actually helping to identify mental illness and deal with that. And I think Trakki is helping in that. So what are your thoughts around that? And have you had any of those sort of mindsets to then trying to change the way of understanding how to help others, not just help yourself as well.
In a way, in our forums and whenever we do encounter people who are quite spiritual, we're very accepting of that. And we, in a way, we try to help them to use Sikhism as the spiritual healer. But if there is a more psychiatric need, then that's more of the therapies and the interventions and the medication. But it's helping people to understand that they both need to work together.
Yes.
And it's a way of framing that in a way that, yes, because spiritualism is a big part of people's lives, and it should be, and so it should remain to be.
Yes.
And it's helping people to understand that that isn't the only thing that is there to cure.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think actually we get a very broad range of attendees from different religious backgrounds, mm-hmm. and with very different life experiences, some more observant for whichever faith than others. But actually, I think all seem to be quite receptive. Once again, generalizing, many of our attendees have tended to be second or third generation, not exclusively, but many have been second or third generation, and probably been a little bit more inherently more receptive to a more secular language. But everyone seems to largely take what we say on board, or what's discussed on board and shared on board.
Okay. So during the pandemic, I guess that would have changed what you're able to do, because it's predominantly face-to-face. What are the thoughts around sort of assisting and helping men during COVID, and have you had a response from people in that situation? And yeah, what has it been like during this pandemic? And I guess part of that is, how would you advise people who potentially need that support during this pandemic, how they can sort of get access to that?
We've all had to adapt, haven't we? We're recording this over Zoom, and that's a kind of forum that's been led within Drukki, since we've had this cloud come over humanity.
Mm.
That has been successful to a point. It's very different, and not everyone feels comfortable doing things in that way. But there have been opportunities there, and they've been followed. The other thing is we're trying to engage with people in other ways. Not necessarily through the forum structure. We're using a lot of social media, and really it's come to the fore. We've run a few sessions which have been kind of Q&As over social media, or things like meditation classes over social media. And also we have a research project on at the moment, for which I think surveys have now been, the response period has now ended, but we'd sent out a survey really asking people how they'd been affected by COVID, asking Punjabi people how they'd been affected by COVID. And we've had well over 400 responses for that. So we're following up the quantitative survey-based information with some online interviews to get, to find out what people are feeling, how they've been affected, how they've been able to engage with mental health services, or if they've felt the need to engage with mental health services. It's a new time, new place, and we're still learning a lot and trying to be an agile organization.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And that we've done our best to promote on social media any COVID resources. And we've even got a tab on the website specifically for COVID-19, both in English and Punjabi booklets, and just general information on how to look after your own mental health and wellbeing, and for, importantly, those around you as well.
Oh, wow. So it's probably a good time to drop the email address and the social medias so that people can, if they want now, to sort of look up that resources?
Yep. So the website is www.taraki, so that's taraki.co.uk.
The Twitter handle is @_taraki_. There is an Instagram account as well, but that's, I can't call that off the top of my head. Sorry.
That's all right. I can get all the links and put them in the episode details so people can access them.
The website's been recently updated as well. So a lot of fresh information, new things going up, blog posts, new materials, the resources that's in there mentioned, people's own stories and experiences shared. Really quite a broad range of different things.
And you've also got a YouTube channel as well, which I think at the moment you've been uploading your live sessions. So I mean, that's probably based on the broader areas, not just the men's mental health. So I guess that's another active place for people to see the work that you do and actually share the experiences from, you know, people with lived experience. Have come onto your Instagram account. Brilliant. So what is the future for Taraki and men's mental health? And is there any, I mean, I know Taraki is quite a young organization, but you know, there's probably a vision and a future that you want to see around men's mental health. I think it'd be good for you to sort of give that insight to the listeners.
I think some of it is learning more about what people need, much more formal research. Now we've got a network of people who can help support that and an audience to get it out to. We're constantly looking for opportunities to collaborate with local organizations. We've reached out to a few NHS providers, organizations like Health Watch. And then also away from healthcare, specifically different types of community organization. It's, I guess, a case of adjusting and adapting, because COVID is a game changer, I guess, for all of us. The good thing with having a small organization, which is volunteer led, is that that agility is, can be found quite quickly, and there are lots of voices out there willing to kind of make suggestions and offer up suggestions and move things forward.
Definitely. So, do you think there's an appetite at some point to maybe bid for grants that are available in this area and sort of take that research and really become a partner? Or sort of a leader in providing these services to our community?
I guess that's what Taraki is trying its best to do. I mean, I know it's already getting involved in research at the University of Birmingham. So specifically looking at trying to win a grant proposal for looking at mental health, specifically in Punjabi men, and Taraki is very much a part of it, but wants to make sure that the views are represented and basically allow and help access to these individuals for research purposes. As Amadeep was saying, with the surveys that are going out, the intention is very much to build a database to eventually contribute to research that will then be published and start to become really recognized and taken seriously in mental health services.
I think that's a key thing to put in perspective, is that even though these issues have existed for so long in our community, until we get that visibility on the data, the research, we're really trying to battle a problem we don't know the full extent of. And I think that's where the difficulty lies in our community, is that even though we've had the Gurdwara system, we've not collated data. We're terrible at collating data. So if that had been done, we would be in a different place now, because you can imagine the potential of every single Gurdwara tapping into their network and then giving us that rich data to then make those asks and put those statistics in front of the government and say, look, here's a community that's screaming for help. You've just not been able to reach them because the language isn't there, or they want to see the same people to trust in the service, etc. And I think this is why it's important that the work that Drucki is doing in the research space is going to lay the foundations for that. So I really hope that, I mean, the 400 responses is really good. I mean, I took part in that survey as well, so it felt like it was quite widely shared on social media, and the uptake was a lot. But I think there's also other organizations probably doing similar research, but in their different speciality fields that they've chosen to help, whether it's domestic violence or et cetera, et cetera. So I think there probably needs to be a consolidation point somewhere to say, right, we found this, you found that, and here's the participants. It's a unique number of participants. So you scale that up, and here's the percentage you get. So yeah, I think it's very credible, the work that you're doing. So another part of the episode is usually helping people who want to get involved in potentially the career paths that you've taken, both of you, but also in working in the mental health space. And maybe there's people out there who want to work in specifically for men's mental health. So what would be good to have is your inspiration, your learnings, and what you've learned from your careers, and what advice you would give to a younger version of yourselves who want to be in that space. Some motivation and some insight, really. So do you want to start, Amardeep?
Yes. So, crikey, God, I'm a bit of an old timer now. I've been in the NHS for 15 years. I was interested in working in the clinical field, but didn't like the look and smell of blood. So something like pharmacy was always going to be a good place to end up. I did science A levels, went to pharmacy school, of which there were quite a few, university. I graduated and did my pre-registration training, so the kind of training that I now help manage and deliver in a hospital in the southwest, in Buckinghamshire Hospitals Trust. And then have worked at a few different hospital trusts as a pharmacist in different specialisms before coming into my current role as a kind of HIV specialist. Now, if you wanted to do a mental health version of that, really after your 4 years of your degree and your fifth year of pre-registration training, once you're a qualified pharmacist on the pharmacist register, to then apply for roles in mental health trusts specifically. And, you know, they're quite sizable, and mental health pharmacy is something that's grown quite significantly. Of course, mental health hospitals and, you know, the clinics over which mental health services are run are quite different to acute hospitals in some ways, but have a very different professional makeup. And then subsequently there are postgraduate training opportunities and courses to, you know, increase your knowledge and to focus your specializing in mental health.
Brilliant. Sandeep?
Yep. So I guess I started my mental health journey back when I would have been during my A-levels, which would have been year 12. So I volunteered at a mental health hostel. It was privately run in Birmingham. I started off doing one day a week, and then it turned out after about 6 months, it increased to 3 days, and then night shifts some days. And basically while studying, I would try and get that experience in as much as I possibly could. But I guess the main thing is not just having it for your CV. It's learning that lived experience of them individuals, because those unique cases are incredibly useful for any mental health career that you want to go into. The biggest piece of advice is to listen to people and to really understand from their point of view what it is that's happening. a lot of the time you might hear them saying that people don't listen to me. And sadly, that's often true in some cases. Whereas if you are there to listen to them, you actually get that different perspective. When their voice of authority needs to be heard, you can be that. So after working there for 5 years, part-time, while I was studying, I then graduated with a degree in psychology. I went to then do my master's in psychology, and then moved to my role here at the University of Birmingham. So my intention is still to go into clinical psychology. So I'm gearing my experience up towards building my CV for my application. But whilst working at the University of Birmingham, I took the opportunity to get involved in as many wellbeing projects as possible. And wellbeing can be related to lots of things. And I think a lot of it is where you can add value. So the learnings that you've taken from any experience that you gain, any reading that you do, apply it. Because people, more often than not, are really grateful for that knowledge that you put in. Because often with mental health, they want somebody who knows what they're talking about in order to implement new changes, new ideas. So be confident in your ability to make change. Now my current role is working on setting up that new initiative after the university won some funding to do so. And again, I'm still bringing in my experience from my degree and from my initial years of working in that mental health hostel to kind of create a holistic approach to well-being in that space. And then if you wanted to go into mental health related careers, I think post COVID, there's going to be a spike in careers such as psychological well-being practitioners. And ways that you can get into that are to do your psychology degree and then do a top-up diploma or a master's in psychological practitioner, psychological well-being practitioner. And then you're eligible to deliver interventions to those who present with, let's say, severe anxiety or depression and low mood. You're able to intervene and offer that support with practical solutions. And I think that's what's going to be really required after COVID. I mean, you have other mental health careers such as counselors, psychotherapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, and even, you know, Amardeep in his role will come across people with mental health problems. You know, it's not limited to specific roles.
Yes.
And I think as a society, we need to take more responsibility in whatever role we are, that we're able and confident enough to intervene if someone is in severe distress or even just want to have a chat. And I think that's you know, the biggest thing that you can offer somebody is your time. Just say, would you just like to have a talk about this? Or how is your day? Instead of the typical fine, say, I'm actually here to listen. So let's not say the typical British response. So yeah, it's fine. No, actually, I had a really rubbish day yesterday. And is it okay if I talk about it? And I think we need to get more used to doing things like that and talking like that. And in which way, you know, we'll come to, a community approach to helping people. And it's not just mental health. It's just your well-being.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely inspirational. I think it's all relevant. And I think it is, you're correct. It applies to everybody. I mean, even in the place that I work, I have a large team, but we've had some mental health training as well. And it's about questioning in a way that is open questions, not just, oh, you're okay, aren't you? You know, that's it. It's a yes, no question. But it's a, how are you today? I noticed you went in the other day. Was everything okay? It's having those engaging conversations on a daily basis and noticing those small things to see the signs of it is very important. I think that's that everybody can benefit from understanding just the basics of it, even if they don't want to become a practitioner as such. I think you touched on a very key thing around volunteering. And I think especially during COVID, some people are fortunate to have quite a lot of spare time on their hands. And even though people are furloughed, they can volunteer for other organizations. And I think sometimes people don't really grasp the benefits of volunteering versus the non-payment of it, because Sandeep is nodding, smiling. But you're a prime example of that. The knowledge you gained from that volunteering experience, you know, is paying you dividends. The further you're going down your career, you're still getting the dividends from that experience. And I think that's such a key thing people don't sometimes realize. They just think of the monetary value. I've got a degree now, I should get a paid job, it should be this much. And then they say, oh, I can't get a job. But there's so many things you can be doing before you even finish your degree or your education, or even if you want to transition to another field, like yourself, you're saying you want to go down the psychologist route, but you're doing a day a week to do that. But to do you've got to do the investment of your time and get the opportunity to learn it. So it doesn't work the opposite way around, where you just theoretically learn something and automatically expect a job out of it. So I think that's a very, very, very important point to get across to all of the listeners and the younger generation who are still in education.
And sorry, can I just add as well?
Yes.
I mean, you might as well, with your time now, just do the free online courses in mental health. So you can go on to websites like read.co.uk. I mean, there are other qualification providers, but it's worth just typing it in. And some are £10, some are free. Eventbrite, some are, you know, they're taking place online. Just fill your day and fill your diary with training like this, and you will thank yourself a year or two down the line when someone presents to you in distress, and you'll say to yourself, I'm really glad I did that training.
Yes, exactly. And it comes down to the ethos of selfless service, where actually you're learning for others, not just yourself. But, you know, in that process, you still learn for yourself and your immediate family, but those skills you then learn for somebody else. And that's how the SEVA works. You work, you yourself have a bigger impact than just you and your immediate family and your network. And I think that's brilliant. So before you finish off, what sort of last advice would you give to people who, the men in particular, around who may be thinking they have some mental illness, or they need some help or support, or somebody else, family or friends, who feel they know somebody who potentially may have that symptoms or need that support? What sort of advice can you give to them, and what sort of resources are immediately available for them?
I think more so than ever, there's a need for people to engage. Sometimes that's formal services, sometimes that's less formal, but to find trusted person or people and speak to them and take it from there. We're lucky now in this day and age that there's access to different types of online resource, and some will be suitable for some people, some won't, but certainly signposting to services is definitely there. And you know, even the NHS funded services are becoming more and more accessible, and easier to find out about. You know, NHS Choices is an excellent website that will tell you which services are available for physical and mental health, and there'll be a decent blurb about the breadth of service offered and the nature and the way in which it's delivered.
Yeah, and I think if you are sitting at home and you do feel that somebody in your household is in distress or is suffering in silence, just go and open the dialogue. Be mindful of your facial expressions, be mindful of your own reactions, but go in and go and ask the question, are you okay? And is there anything that we can do that can make it a bit easier? I know it's a difficult time, it's challenging, but we're all in this together. So, and we're here to help you. And I guess it is that level of empathy that's really gonna, you know, help break down the stigma.
Brilliant. So if the listeners want to support Rukki, what are the options, as both financially and in any other way that they can actually support the organisation?
So our website, as Sandeep mentioned, is therukki.co.uk. When you get to the homepage, there's a whole load of information across the top. including things like people's blogs, different events that are being held and so forth, and projects. But right on the top right-hand corner, there's a button called Take Action. And if you click on that, you're given the opportunity to donate, so financial donation or to volunteer. But of course, at any point, feel free to contact us and through the website if need be. And yes, there is much that needs to be done, and we're always looking for people to support in whichever way they can, wherever they are.
And I guess awareness raising is one of the big ways that people can support you, because there's no, you know, there's never too much awareness for these things. And I think especially if they're able to reach more people in their networks, then, you know, that makes it the spread of what Drucky's trying to do better, and it allows people to make, you know, make full use of the support network that they potentially don't know about to help them at this time. So yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you both on the show, and I definitely welcome you back in the future. Maybe we can talk about other areas of Drucky and what they're doing. But I'm big on supporting community-led initiatives and giving a voice to an organization that probably needs much more awareness. And I think what I find is, as I have different organizations on, I guess I'd become a bit of a network connector so as well. So if I see how organizations can work together or certain individuals, and one of the things that I've noticed in the asks and the other organizations is bid writers. So it seems to be a very good job and in demand, people who know how to write bids and bid for grants, because they require a lot of work. It's a lot of detail, and there's a particular way of doing it. Every authority has a different way of doing it. And then even then, once you do get a grant or funding, it's the performance requirements, the administration is so heavily burdened. So I think there is something there that needs to be in place, almost like a framework that an organization needs to put together, which will then help the other organizations to not worry so much about the admin heavy stuff and then focus on the front line. Because, you know, the more you do on the front line is the more you're doing the purpose rather than getting bogged down into the back administration. So yeah, I'll keep in contact and connect people and do that. And, you know, whenever you need anything, if you want to be on the platform again, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. And I think on the final message, I would just like to talk to all the men in particular, because this episode is about mental health for men, is to understand that you have unique worth, you have value in the world, and there is a lot of support services in today's age available to you from a smartphone. So you don't have to see people initially, but the ideal point is to get to that face-to-face and support groups, because that's where the benefit lies in understanding the issues and the way you get over them. And the big thing is awareness, really. So do get in touch with Drucky, and I will list all of the links and resources that you've mentioned. If you have any more, please do send them to me, and they'll all be put into the episode information to be as helpful as possible to anybody listening to this podcast. So I wish you well. Wish Drucky all the best in the future. I wish Drucky has all the Drucky.
No, thank you for having us, and, you know, thank you for giving us such a fantastic platform to, you know, get us heard and, you know, get, you know, men to talk more about their mental health. So no, we really appreciate you having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Here.
It's been a pleasure having you, and this is what the podcast, this is what the platform is for. So it's fulfilling that purpose only. So it wouldn't be what it is without you taking time out to talk about the initiatives and really adding value to the world around us, really. So I guess this is the time to say goodbye, but no doubt we'll be in touch soon. And to everybody else who's listening, do stay safe and stay well, and stay blessed. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Seek Coach podcast. If you found this episode valuable, do share with your friends and family, and do give us feedback. You can email us at theseekcoach@gmail.com, or find us on Facebook. Just search the Seek Coach podcast, and follow us on Instagram @TheSeekCoach. Thank you for listening. Stay blessed.